appreciative of the folks here at Creighton for inviting us. And I will start this morning by introducing the folks who are on the panel, because we are down two members of the Nebraska Supreme Court, so we've asked a district court judge and a member of the Court of Appeals to join us today. So to my far right, as I'm looking out to you, is Judge Francie Reedman from the Court of Appeals. And then we have Justice Stephanie Stacy from Lincoln. And to my immediate right is Justice Lindsay Miller-Lerman from here in Omaha. And I'll introduce myself. I'm Mike Hevick, and I'm the Chief Justice. To my immediate left is Justice Bill Castle from O'Neill. And to his left is Jeff Monk, who is from Nebraska City. And on the far left is Judge Stephanie Martinez from Sarpy County. So that's the lineup. The first case of the day then is Berkland versus Foyer. And is it Ms. Cano?
Cano.
Ms. Cano, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Elizabeth Cano and I represent the appellants, Shelley and Todd Berkland. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The district court dismissed the Berkland claims on the pleadings and did so based on resolution of a fact question. Specifically, the district court dismissed all three theories that the Berklands pled, breach of contract, breach of warranty, and fraud, based primarily on the district court's determination that the damage, the defect to the building that the Berklands were to purchase from the sellers who were defendants below was reasonably ascertainable. Now, this court has consistently treated whether something was reasonably ascertainable, reasonably discoverable, as a question of fact for the fact finder. And where the district court departed from this was in determining that because the defect became known prior to closing, it was reasonably ascertainable and we haven't plausibly pled a cause of action. But there are several problems with this premise and the conclusion drawn from it. First, the district court failed to focus on the appropriate time. The time is whether the defect was reasonably ascertainable at the time the purchase agreement was signed and at the time that the fraudulent misrepresentations were made, at the time that the duty to speak occurred, and at that
doesn't the purchase agreement anticipate an inspection by buyers, should they so choose, rather than prior to a purchase agreement?
Your Honor, it does. There are two provisions of the purchase agreement. The first says that at the time of the purchase agreement, that the sellers were representing that there were no defects in the building that were not reasonably ascertainable, and it specifically said that the Berklands were making the purchase based on their personal inspection or investigation. We talked about a personal inspection investigation. Whether those defects were reasonably ascertainable based on the Berklands' personal inspection investigation is a fact question.
And you're saying that the buyers made a representation that was not accurate insofar as they said they'd inspected what they had?
The buyers, Your Honor? No. The buyers, there was no representation that they had a professional inspection of the roof. And there's certainly no evidence that the damage to the roof would have been reasonably ascertainable based on the steps that the Berklands took or the steps that the Berklands were reasonably required to take. Now,
But they have an opportunity after signing. Buyers have an opportunity to inspect after signing.
Yes, Your Honor, they had an opportunity to inspect after signing, but by that point, the sellers had already made a representation that was false and that they knew to be false. that there were no reasonably ascertainable defects that they had not disclosed in writing. And the Berklins had relied on that, not only in going forward with the purchase agreement, but also in choosing to move forward with the property as the target for the like-kind exchange. So there had been a promise made, and the promise was, in the contract, was in terms of what had already been disclosed in writing.
What is it specifically that you think was not disclosed?
Your Honor, two things. One, that there was significant hail damage to the roof that materially affected the value of the property. Second, that the sellers had made an insurance claim related to that, received insurance proceeds, and not used it to fix the roof damage, such that the Berklins, as soon as they learned of this, this impaired, they went and then got an inspector to look at it specifically and learned that they would not be able to insure the roof of the building without spending a lot of money to repair this damage to the roof.
So your initial statement was that the trial court erred insofar as issuing the context of the motion to dismiss of finding a fact.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And where in your pleading indicate that the roof issue was ascertainable, where in your pleading does it indicate that it was not reasonably ascertainable?
Your
Honor, like it's really tough. You need a cherry picker, and that's just beyond what we usually do, or somebody take a 15-foot ladder. Where in your pleading do you allege that this is unreasonable to find it?
Your Honor, we specifically allege that at the time of the inspection, it was not within the ordinary, it would not have been observable with ordinary diligence. And we believe that meets the pleading standard here. And what the district court did was look at the fact that it was discovered after the purchase agreement had been signed. But it's important to understand that it wasn't discovered. It was tardily disclosed. It was after the Berklins had signed the purchase agreement, had moved forward. We were on the eve of closing. Because of this like-kind exchange, the Berklins could not walk away without suffering serious damage. Then it was the sellers who said, there's this damage to the roof. And then the Berklins hired an inspector specifically to look at this. So there's no evidence that this would have been detected by an ordinary inspection. There's no evidence that the Berklins should have...
Is there evidence that this took extraordinary inspection? Is there an allegation that this took extraordinary efforts to find?
Your Honor, we have alleged that it was not observable within ordinary prudence and diligence and believe that that meets the pleading standard. I don't believe there's an allegation that says it required an extraordinary inspection, but I don't think that's something that this court has ever required. I think in the case of a claim where we're claiming that the sellers specifically knew about this damage and failed to disclose it despite having said they had disclosed material defects that weren't reasonably ascertainable, that what is required is that the only thing that would prevent a fraud claim is somebody who buries their head in the sand, somebody who's willfully negligent. If the result is otherwise, then we've alleged intentional fraud, and there's essentially a contributory negligence defense built in. And I don't believe that any decision from the court has required that kind of proof, but certainly it's never been imported at the pleading stage before we've even had a chance to deduce any evidence about what an inspection would have revealed, what kind of inspection would it have taken to find this damage without it having been disclosed and specifically looked for.
Is it your position that the defect had to be reasonably ascertainable? Two,
position is actually that the duty to disclose would apply to defects that are not reasonably ascertainable. So if I haven't been clear about that, but that's the position we take, that the contract needs to say that there are no defects either that they either haven't disclosed or that are not reasonably ascertainable based on a personal inspection, not a professional inspection that may or may not happen somewhere down the line.
Is some duty to disclose the fact that there was an insurance claim and that it had been paid but not used to fix the roof. What is your authority for that?
Your Honor, we believe that materially affected the value of the property, and this is something that someone in the commercial real estate context would expect to be disclosed. This court has said that information you would expect that's uniquely within the knowledge of the vendor, that in the profession you would expect to be disclosed, there's a duty to disclose it. We, of course, haven't had an opportunity to produce evidence on this point, but this is a point that should the case go forward, we believe we'd be able to present evidence on, just like you would in any commercial context, about what are the duties and customs of the profession.
Before you sit down, the appellee's brief suggests, or seems to suggest, that there was a judicial admission of some sort in your pleading that the defect was reasonably discoverable because you eventually did discover it. What's your response to that argument?
The response to that is two-part. One, we didn't discover it, they disclosed it. That's what's pled. We plead that after the purchase agreement was signed, when they were already supposed to have disclosed defects, and just before closing, they let us know that the roof had been damaged. And then, based on that, we conducted an inspection, and the inspection confirmed the extent of the damage. They're taking those two things and saying, because you found it, you've admitted that it was reasonably ascertainable. But we didn't find it. We were told about it and confirmed it, and that's not the same thing as admitting that it was reasonably ascertainable at the relevant time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Cruz, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, faculty and staff of the Creighton Law School for hosting us. My name is Brian Cruz. I'm an attorney with Rumble & Mecki LLP in Lincoln, Nebraska. I represent the appellees, Brad Pure and Structure Technologies. Appellants in this case are asking the court to overturn 100 years of real estate law that says there is no duty to disclose apparent defects. Gibb versus City Court Mortgage, the court held material facts and information are equally accessible. In that case, there's nothing to disclose. There's no duty to disclose in that case. In this case, information was equally available. The purchase agreement contemplates that the appellants were able to do any inspections they wanted to do, and they did those. So the information was equally accessible, and the information with regard to the condition of the property was ascertained.
Would this be different if it were a residential property?
It absolutely would be different, Your Honor, if it were a residential property, because the Nebraska legislature has decided in its wisdom that residential purchasers have to sign a disclosure statement and disclose those defects. I think it's important to also realize that the Nebraska legislature, when they passed that law, they only made that applicable to residential real estate. What the appellants are asking you to do is to really change and apply that statute to commercial purchases when the legislature didn't order that to be done or direct that to be done. The purchase agreement does not impose a duty to disclose. The purchase agreement contains a representation that there are no defects that are not reasonably ascertainable.
Doesn't it also state that the seller represents that there are no defects which the seller has not disclosed?
It says that, as Judge, you indicated before, as an or condition, which is it's not reasonably ascertainable or which I didn't disclose. So if there was something that, certainly it gave an option for it to be disclosed, but it did not require it to be disclosed. If it had said and, I think that you would be right to say that there might have been an obligation, but since it said or, there is not. As we're looking at the pleadings in this case, I think it's important to read
actually what was pled, and the plaintiffs pled through the course of plaintiff's inspection, it was determined the roof had received substantial hail damage. They didn't plead that they conducted an expert inspection. An expert is not mentioned in the pleadings. They said they inspected it. Plaintiff's inspection revealed. Plaintiff's inspection ascertained the damage. In addition,
I beg your pardon. So your position in this, in the context of a motion to dismiss, was there's an allegation. It can be ascertained, but is it reasonably ascertained? Is it easy to find?
Yeah, I think, Your Honor, if you look at
or should they be pleading it's not easy to find?
I think they do need to plead that it's not easy to find, and I think that comes into the Twombly line of decisions with motions to dismiss and what is plausible.
Didn't they plead that in paragraph 24 when they said that the existence of the defect was not observable through reasonably diligent attention and observation?
No. They pled that at the time the purchase agreement was signed. It was not within their personal observation. They didn't plead that it wasn't reasonably ascertainable or that they had to go through some extraordinary inspection obligation to do it, or that they hired an expert who had to go through some destructive testing on this roof. They pled it was not within their reasonable, diligent attention, observation, and judgment at the time the purchase agreement was executed.
If we side with you, can they simply go ahead and file another pleading?
Well, Your Honor, I suppose you could certainly, that's within your authority to do, but I think when you have three opportunities to do that and you fail to do it with the second amended complaint, at some point it becomes futile. The other thing that I would say is that if you look at what the court is able to do under our jurisprudence with regard to motions to dismiss, the court uses its judicial experience and common sense in cases. That's what the court has said you can do. This is damage to a roof. We all know that roofs get damaged from hail. This is hail damage to a roof. Those are determined through a visual inspection.
I'm interested.
You walk up on the roof and you see the roof.
I'm interested in the allegation that your client had made an insurance claim, gotten the money to fix the roof, but did not fix the roof and did not disclose that. Did you have some duty to disclose that? I mean, that's not ascertainable, is it?
Well, I think it was ascertainable because, A, the plaintiffs pled. We talked to our insurance, several insurance companies, and through those discussions, we found out that if we could not insure the roof. So they did, in fact, find that out through their investigation. But in addition, I don't believe that there's any requirement. I'm not aware of any cases that say you have an obligation to disclose whether you received it for insurance proceeds and used them for a purpose.
And there's no way they would have ascertained that, would they? The buyers? Would they have known that you received the insurance proceeds and didn't use them?
They pled they did. They pled that they spoke with their insurance company.
After the
fact. Well, that's the whole purpose of the inspection period, Your Honor, is that you use that time period to find those things out.
You see the roof damage, then the next step is to find out if there's an insurance claimed or sought out for that. Is that the responsibility of the buyer?
Absolutely. That's the purpose of the inspection period. I think the question is there a pre, again, with that type of question, is there a pre-signing obligation to disclose something? And there's certainly no obligation for somebody who's advertising a commercial building to disclose those things, at least under the law as it exists, unless this court decides to change it. There's no obligation to disclose that I received insurance proceeds or that I have an apparent defect to the building. That's just not the case. Once the purchase agreement is signed, if the contract provides those duties, which it does not in this case with regard to either the roof, which was ascertainable and ascertained, or the insurance proceeds, then there's no claim, and the court was right to dismiss the case.
I think your position has been that the pleading alleged this was ascertainable, but
right.
The pleading failed to say it's tough to find it.
I think that's right.
And is there anything in the pleading that would suggest that missing element is therefore plausible?
I think the closest was what Justice Stacey said in paragraph 24, which is, at the time we signed the purchase agreement, it was not within our personal knowledge, but there's nothing indicating in the complaint that says that this was an expert inspection or that anything over and above a visual inspection was required to see the damage to this roof.
Ms. Cano suggests that our liberal pleading rules should cover this. What's your response to that?
There certainly are liberal pleading rules. However, they still have to also meet the test of plausibility. And although reasonableness is a question for the fact finder, you still have to get through that initial plausibility gatekeeping function. You have to put those together and read them in harmony. You can't just say, well, I use the word reasonable, therefore it's a question of fact. We would never be able to dispose of a complaint with regard to negligence or any other type of action if it's just, well, I said it's reasonable, therefore it's a question of fact. That certainly is not, you have to read those, I think, as the court is aware, in harmony.
That which was dismissed was the third version of the complaint, is that right?
It was the second amended complaint, so yes, it was the third version of the complaint. In addition, I would note that all of the cases cited by the appellants involve residential real estate for the most part. The Utah case they cite, Mitchell versus Christensen, the Ohio case, Tipton versus Nuzum, is a residential case. And in that case, the court further held that as-is clauses absolutely bar claims for non-disclosure, which apparently is even true in a residential case. And this purchase agreement says that the buyers accept the property in its present condition. Now, it wasn't quite as-is, but I caucus with folks in my office, and we couldn't determine any real distinction between in its present condition and as-is. Buyers inspected it. They accept it in their present condition. The cases in appellant's brief would say that this claim is barred even in a residential context, I think. In addition, I think the court looked at the remedies that were allowed in this case, and the contractual remedies was that the buyer may terminate this purchase agreement at any time if they find anything that's wrong with it. That was their remedy. They chose that remedy. They were not entitled to have us go out and fix something, which you'll see in purchase agreements that say, if we find something wrong, seller is responsible, buyer is responsible for the first $1,000 and seller for the balance, or vice versa. This is, if there's something wrong with it, we walk. And they, rather than walking, they chose to try to enforce what I call the specific performance plus, which is give me what I contracted for plus more. They were really trying to use this as a bargaining tool to try to get some additional funds for the roof when there was no obligation to disclose. We asked the court for order approving the motion to the order of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the second case of the day, which is Freeman versus Hoffman LaRoche, Inc.